Okay. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Welcome to another episode of Justice Time Machine, starring Cody and CJ.
Oh, yeah, we're doing names.
We haven't introduced ourselves in a while.
Well, I figured if you don't know who we are, get the fuck out.
Like, this might be their first one.
Okay, hi, welcome.
Hi, I'm CJ.
Don't get the fuck out, I'm Cody.
Stay inside.
Who picks this? Oh, I guess if you're going backwards.
Yeah.
Some people go backwards.
If somebody just found out about it, this could be their first episode. It's like, oh, I'll check out the latest episode. Mm. Who are these people?
And the first thing they hear is, get the fuck out.
Yeah. Stay inside.
Okay.
Stay with us here.
Fair enough. Yeah. So, this is mid-season finale.
Well, yeah.
It's five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do they call it in the television market? The sweeps. This is the sweeps.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah. Where it's like mid-season. It's like a really important time.
Mid-season finale.
Well, this is, mid-season.
I'm used to shows taking a break. Like, they hit mid-season, and they take a little break,
and
they come back.
I think that's like sweeps or something. Mm. Well, yeah, so this so we do 10-episode seasons.
Yeah.
I'm going to, like, talk to the listener, like, this is the first time listening to
For
anything.
For all you noobs out here.
We do 10 episodes a season. This is season 4, and we're on episode 5, so do the math.
Yeah, do that. And if you're going backwards, you're going to get to season 1 and realize it's really long. Yeah. It's not 10 episodes. Season 1 was, like, 30.
You know what? Do we have the power? I could just go into our thing and change all the episode dates and just mix them all up.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. Fuck everything up.
Yeah, yeah.
If you wanted to.
Why not?
You don't have the time for that.
All right. So this season we're talking about
Napoleon. This season. I think it's episode.
This season we're talking about anxieties.
Oh yeah, we're there. I was like, you're ready. Okay, go. That's my anxiety.
So, Cody found his new anxiety, which is thinking he's going to start his segment, but we're still on the introduction. All right, so this is going to be a mess, you guys.
Buckle up, bitches.
But we're staying with it. I'm not starting.
No. This is one take, no editing. Just go.
Our anxieties are discussed at the top of every episode.
Yes.
Cody's done the last 4. Or three.
Three. We skipped, three.
We skipped the first one. So my anxiety that I wanted to bring to the table, because I owed you one, is the idea of karma.
Oh, love it. Gives me anxiety all the time.
It really stresses me out. So,
it stresses you out?
Yeah, it stresses me out. So if something negative happens,
yeah.
I think that it's because I deserve it, because I did something to somebody else.
I get that. I totally get that.
And if something good happens, it means I have to do something good in return. So life is all about checks and balances. It's all about an ebb and a flow.
Yeah.
A yin and a yang.
Totally.
So if you're riding that type, if you're walking that tightrope, life is every day is a constant struggle between, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? Or do I need to do something bad to get something good, or like reverse?
Yeah.
So that causes a lot of anxiety to figure out at what end of the spectrum you're on. Are you on the good end or are you on the bad end?
So I'm a big believer in karma. Mm-hmm. Always have been.
Yeah.
Because I believe in reincarnation. So I used to think like that, where it's like everything was, I have to do something good to get something good, or something's bad happening to me. Like, it's because I did something bad.
Right.
To get rid of this anxiety that you're talking about, I had to come to the realization that, I guess it's not really, because I think this is actually how it works. Karma doesn't work in immediate results.
Okay.
It's not like, oh, you did something good today, you get something good tomorrow. You could be feeling the effects of karma from, like, 5 years ago. Like, karma doesn't work that fast. Like, so, you know, if you all of a sudden, like, you know, maybe your car got for example, Brenda's car got hit by the bus when we weren't even freaking there.
Mm-hmm.
That could be considered bad karma. Who knows what the fuck it's for?
Right.
It could have been something we did last week. It could have been something we did a year ago.
Could it be something in the future?
Maybe.
Could it?
I don't know if karma works that way. I don't think karma works forward. I think it works backwards.
Like, it expects you to do something bad, you know, 5 years from now, and now you're getting it now just to get it out of the way.
That's not fair. No, that wouldn't be fair.
So, the idea of karma is just a precog machine.
No, it's
a pre-crime division.
No, it works off the past.
Okay.
It works off the past. But I to get the anxiety away from me, like, because, like, you start living this thing where you're, like, you start second-guessing every decision you make.
Right.
And you can't live that way.
Yeah.
Some things might come back to bite you,
right?
But you just have to keep. You just have to think every single day, like, I'm gonna do what I think is best,
right?
Like, because it's a lot of it's a mental state. Like, if you something you do might be considered maybe not great for someone else, but you did it with the intention that it was the best choice that you could do.
Okay, here's where here's where it fails for me.
Okay. Karma fails or the like your
karma,
logic fails?
Just karma. Okay. And my logic concurrently.
Okay.
Okay. So strap in, Buttercup.
Okay.
So I've seen a lot of videos lately of people like acting really bad online lately just because for some reason I got into this rabbit hole of looking up people being really mean to like Uber drivers and like people being mean to you know staff and stuff like that. I was just watching
compilations of that
and I was like every video just got me more and more upset. So what, how bad is my bad and how good is my good? Like, is there a level of, like, if you're that awful to somebody, will you have something that awful happen to you?
Yeah, I think karma like, comes back equally.
It comes, so, it balances itself out with something just as bad happening to you.
Yeah.
But that's not always the case. Terrible people have great things happen to them all the time, and vice versa.
True, true. That's where the people that don't believe in karma come into play.
Right, yeah. So then that means that if you believe in it, it exists, but if you don't, it doesn't.
That's a fair point.
Right?
That's a fair point.
Okay.
Because, yeah, you're totally right. There is that whole aspect of, like, yeah, really shitty people getting nothing but good luck.
Right.
And it's like, well, they make their own luck kind of thing, you know, because they are shitty to people. They fucking step on everyone's shoulders.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Because karma doesn't have an afterlife. It's reincarnation.
Well, no, karma can transcend into your next life.
Reincarnation.
Yeah. Yes. Because, like, you know, your all of your misdeeds. So let's say, okay, actually... Boom, boom, boom.
Okay.
So let's say that person that's really shitty to the Uber driver and, you know, shitty to their staff and does nothing but fucking awful things. Mm-hmm. Maybe karma, this is what I said, karma doesn't always come back immediately.
Yeah.
They don't get anything bad happening to them their entire life until they come back in their next life as a fucking salmon.
Got it.
And they meet a bear.
And they get shot out of a cannon.
Exactly.
In that salmon cannon.
Exactly. And they're like, oh, I'm a salmon now. I'm going to, oh, sweet, a waterfall. And they jump and a bear's just like fucking slashing.
And their whole life is just swimming uphill.
Yeah.
Upstream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to lay some fucking eggs and then die.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
All right.
Karma can take the long road.
So, I mean. Okay. So, like, it affects me so much. Like, seeing those videos. I was on the phone. I got $1,000 stolen from me recently.
Yeah, shit.
And I was on the phone with the bank about it. And I kind of got, like, a little heated at one point where I was, like, you know, asking them to check the cameras and stuff like that. And I kind of raised my voice and then I immediately backpedaled and I was like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I'm just
frustrated. And the guy on the other line was like, dude, if it was me, I'd blow out your fucking eardrums right now.
Exactly, yeah.
He was like, don't worry about it. But that's how much it affects me that it's instantaneous. I think, like, why am I being mean to this person? It's not their problem. Like,
well, think about it this way, though.
Yeah.
Chewy. Stop.
There's a puppy in the room.
Chewy's in here, and he thinks scratching through the woods is going to get him fucking China or something. Stop it. There you go. Sit down.
Oh, good boy.
Sorry. Love you. Think about it this way, though. Maybe. Okay, so sometimes those are aspects out of your control, though.
Right.
Like, which in most aspects are, especially when it comes to karma. That maybe you losing that $1,000 because someone robbed you isn't retaliation to what anything you did, but to balance it out, karma can bring you something good in the future to balance out that negativity that someone else inflicted into your life.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So
let's take the L.
Karma can work that way too.
Take the L today.
Yeah.
Get the win tomorrow.
Exactly. So karma could be like, hey, you know what? Like, you didn't really do anything to deserve that. Your checks, your balance was clear, bud.
Yeah, you're good on my end. I got my notebook out.
Yeah, we're gonna balance that scale.
Yeah.
Here's something.
Right.
Like, so, who knows?
All right.
Like, you gotta look at that one, too.
It's still a big thing of anxiety. It's still a lot of stress, though.
Oh, I totally get it. Some people probably fucking rack their brains about this on a daily basis.
But just, like, the more people I meet, like, the worse they are to others.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, so frustrating.
Yeah.
I saw a video of somebody using karma as an excuse to act poorly, where they were being, like, really rude to an Uber driver or something like that. And then at the end, she was like, karma's coming to you. Karma's coming to you.
I've seen that one.
And I was like, no, karma's coming to you, lady.
Yeah. Like, I've seen that exact video. And I'm like, no, I don't think you understand.
Yeah.
It's like in The Princess Bride, it's like, This word you keep saying. Yeah. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Yeah. No, you're the one that's supposed to get
it. You're going to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that lady's going to burn.
Yeah, like, she's salmon.
She's going to be a fucking salmon.
Fat redneck salmon.
And I'm
going
to fucking eat her on a sushi roll.
She's going to be the first hillbilly salmon you've ever seen.
Yeah, that video sucks.
Yeah, I hated that one.
Yeah, there's a lot of those out there right now where it's like people are just infuriating, man.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel you, though. That can be very... nerve-wracking.
Yeah,
but you kind of have to if you want to believe in karma, you just have to keep looking forward.
Yeah,
like you can't dwell on it in the moment because karma doesn't work in the moment. Like you have to keep looking to the next step. Like that's the only way to get through believing in karma.
Yeah,
like
you take the good, you take the bad,
something
yeah. Add them up, the facts of life,
the facts, yeah, something
the facts,
yeah,
of life,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Alright.
Who are you? Here's to me. Cheers.
Okay. You want to start the time machine, Cody?
Okay.
Cody.
See, this is how karma works. I was a good boy,
mm-hmm.
And now I get to start.
Now you get to start. You waited so patiently.
It's in karma. Okay. Sorry for the really bad time machine. We were doing time machine noises again?
I don't know.
Okay.
No, remember?
You put me on the spot. I was like...
Remember, our whole thing is to break traditions.
Yeah.
So let's break it and start it again.
I can't keep up.
This podcast is destroy, rebuild every
destroy
episode.
Destroy, rebuild. Chewie, you need to figure out where you're going. Okay.
Sorry. Technical difficulties. It's
like his name tag is just dragging along. Can you just...
Oh, there he goes.
There you go, buddy. We just can't figure out where to put his bed, and he wants to sit in the opposite.
There you go.
Okay. All right. Good boy. Good boy. Okay. So... Napoleon. We're talking about Napoleon.
Yeah.
Napoleon Bonaparte.
Yeah. No Tay, just Bonaparte.
But he did spell his name differently. His family spells his name differently than he goes by, that we know him by. Mm-hmm. It used to be like Bonaparte.
Yeah.
But like he
Bonaparte.
Yeah, more Italian.
Yeah.
He actually changed it to Bonaparte later on. But,
Bonaparte.
Yeah, Bonaparte. Like more like bonafide.
Yeah.
Like, so.
Very Creole.
Very Creole. He was born August 15, 1769 in Corsica, which was a, Italian province, back then, or it was like Genoan, which is part of Italy. He had a ton of siblings. I think there was like, he was like the fourth one born. I think he totally had like seven or eight siblings, which all had like super normal names. Like,
might just be a normal amount, just a very Catholic family.
Yeah, it's a lot for, like, me.
Yeah.
But the thing I thought was funny about his siblings was, like, all of his names were, like, their names were normal. It was, like, Joseph or Caroline. And then this pretentious fuck was, like, Napoleon. Like,
this is my brother Chaz.
Yeah.
And this is my other brother Napoleon.
Frank.
Yeah.
Natalie.
Tanner.
Napoleon. Joseph.
Tanner's my least favorite
it's
name.
It's the worst name.
Such a bad name. Sorry, Tanner.
Sorry. That and, like, Max. But, sorry. But, so I just thought that was kind of funny. The year that he was born was, the year that France conquered Corsica.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I think, so we talked about this a lot when we were doing research, that, like, his family and him are just a big fucking, like, history of irony.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they fucking, like, say one thing, and then just, like, later in life just fucking go exactly against it. So I guess maybe you can call them hypocritical. I just find it a little ironic. Or maybe I'm like Alanis Morissette, I just don't know what ironic means. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, rain on a wedding day, she kind of has a point there.
It's not ironic, it's just sucky.
Yeah, it is kind of just wait, what's the other ones?
I don't know, they're all not, none of them are irony.
It's like a free ride when you...
When you pay?
When you actually pay or something.
Yeah,
it's like, a free ride when you've already paid. I think that's the...
Yeah, it's like, okay. Yeah, she doesn't understand irony.
But she's still the voice of God.
She still is the voice of God. So, actually, she's not. Alan Rickman's the voice of God. She's God in Dogma. Alan Rickman's the voice.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Well,
which is even better. Even
way better. Thank you.
Yeah. I was just like, yeah.
Thank you for making my point stronger.
You're welcome. Okay, so the weird thing with his family was, so this was, okay, something really common in Corsica was a lot of them were, like, from the Italian mainland,
mm-hmm.
descendants of that. They weren't, like Corsican. They were Italians, like nobles who lived in Corsica, and they always viewed themselves as Italian, not Corsican.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so they had this weird, like, separation of, like, national pride. They were like, if, like, fuck this place, like, we live here, like, we're still, like, high up and everything, but, like, we're Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's our pride.
Okay.
But when France took over Corsica, his father joined the revolution to keep Corsica's independence, and it was, like, this freedom... Like, yeah. fighting, like, lawyer, and it's like, wait.
Yeah, you fucking turncoat.
You just said, like, you just said you're all fucking Italian, just go to Italy then. Like,
fair weather fan.
But they were like, no, France, you can't take this. Like, this is our home. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
Like, so, I just thought that was, like, really just weird. Like, it's like, pick a side.
Yeah. Like, I'm playing both sides.
Yeah.
So I always stay on top.
It's just fucking weird.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's that, we're just going to fast forward because, like, that whole thing had to do more with his parents. He actually didn't move to France until he was 9.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he actually moved to the mainland and he went there to start school. He didn't even learn French until he was 10. So he actually was made fun of a lot growing up because he never, like, spoke. Like, he always spoke with a really thick Corsican accent.
Because mm-hmm.
His first language was Corsican. Second language was Italian. Then he learned French. So he always, like... Kind of like I was when I was doing this, I kind of like just imagine Brad Pitt in Inglourious Basterds when he's like, Buongiorno.
Oh, like, yeah, in the theater scene.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
Like, so I just figured like
that's like so transparent.
But he's trying to speak French.
Yeah.
He's like, Bonjour. Like, just fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And everyone made fun of him for it. Like, mm-hmm. they just always gave him shit for like not being able to speak French. Right. Okay. He did get, like, very, very fluent in it, mm-hmm. but he never learned to, like, properly write
yeah.
French.
That still happens in France all the time. If you live in Canada and go to Montreal, yeah.
Really?
A lot of like, native-born Canadians, Canadians, I'm a fucking retard. Sorry, I'm an idiot. native-born Canucks, if they yeah. go to, like, Montreal,
it's and
don't speak French. If they don't speak French, they get made fun of.
Because it's like, French Canada.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, interesting fact, back then... France's population was roughly 28 million.
Mm-hmm.
It was estimated that only 3 million even spoke standard proper French.
Oh, okay.
Even less can write French.
So he's a majority.
He's in the majority, yeah, but yeah. like, I think he was going to like a really nice school.
Oh, must have been.
Like a really, really nice French Catholic school, mm-hmm. and like, so it was just like... Oh, just yeah. a bunch of fucking, like, snobby Draco Malfoy. Just like...
It's like going to modern day and not being yeah. a football star.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
Sorry.
I can't jump a... I can't throw a ball 100 yeah. yards. Sorry.
And he's 5'7", so they're like,
yeah.
He's like, I can't even play sports here. But regardless of that, like, he was really, really good at school.
Yeah.
He fucking killed it, like, excelled like crazy. I think at one point... there was a course he was supposed to be taking to graduate, and it required 2 years, but his father died, and so he did it in one.
Mm.
So he could get out and, like, start working.
Okay, so being, like, kind of a patriarch, a man of the house.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, he finished a 2-year course in 1 year.
Okay.
So he was super smart. He was, like, really good at math, mm-hmm. really good at the geography. Like, he knew, like his... Yeah. For war.
Yeah.
But, so obviously, leading into that, he joined the military. Became pretty successful. He, like, rose to the ranks. He had some, like, prominent victories here and there, especially during the French Revolution.
Kind of like a young Genghis.
A little bit, yeah. He was really, like, climbing up and, like, yeah. really making a name for himself.
Yeah.
Because I think at that point, during the French Revolution, he was really young. I think he was, like, only in his, maybe, like, early 20s. So, finally, the bed. I knew it would work. I knew it. We just hit it with the bed underneath us.
Yeah.
And he was going to go right for it.
Great work, Joey. Great work.
You're killing it. So when the French Revolution broke out, he was really torn because, like, there was even part of that kind of involved Corsica, because it was a French province.
I can't stop thinking of Corsicant for some reason. Whenever you say Corsica, Corsicant from Star Wars.
Oh, Coruscant?
Coruscant.
It's Coruscant. Corsicant.
Coruscant.
I was like, what the heck is Coruscant? It's Coruscant. Yeah. So, okay, it's kind of close.
Yeah.
So
of Corsica.
So it's this funny story. So his, like, role model in the military that he looked up to, like, went off to go lead the campaign in Corsica to keep the peace there during the revolution. And Napoleon wanted to go follow under him. But apparently his, like, role model didn't like him. So when he went there, he was like, get the fuck out. Like, I don't even like you.
What?
He was like this annoyance.
Okay.
So
Napoleon, Engelbeiter kind of thing?
Yeah. So Napoleon found himself in this weird kind of, like, limbo where he's like, well, okay, like, I'm here to fight for the French. Mm-hmm. But I'm from Corsica, but then there's, like, this other group that's, like, not on either side. Like, I don't know who to join, and this guy doesn't like me. So he, like, made it really weird for him, which makes, like, later he would end
up... So he could have well resorted back to the Italian forces, then.
I think he actually ended up fighting for a group of French loyal Corsicans.
Okay.
Which his, like, role model ended up, like, kind of going astray. They ended up actually, like, fighting at one point, and, like, Napoleon got to, like, beat him. Mark can check that. I read that somewhere.
Ooh, Mark's coming in early.
Yeah, Mark. I don't know. Dude, his life's confusing. Like, dude, they said he went to Corsica and, like, three different regiments from it. And I was like, I don't know where he's at. Like,
yeah, get after it, buddy.
Go. I gotta get him something to do. Like, he'll give you more to do. So, where was I? Gotcha. Okay, so French Revolution. That's where he gets his name. He comes out of that pretty prominent. So when we talked about this in Robespierre, after the French Revolution is done, the old regime is kicked out. They are replaced with, the government's replaced with what's called the Directory.
Right.
That's like the new provisional government.
Right.
It's
like a five-member team.
Five-member team, yeah.
Yeah.
They're kind of in charge running things. It's a little chaotic. Mm-hmm. They're not really established that well. But they notice Napoleon, they really start to notice him after he has this really great defeat against the Austrians in 1796, and they're like, okay, this guy's pretty good. So they offer him a job. They offer him a job to lead an invasion of Britain, which is just fucking stupid. Like, don't invade Britain. No one ever does that, right, like, successfully.
Okay.
Ever. Like, I think the French did it once, like, in the very beginning, but that's because Britain was still a... like, not established, and that's where we get, like, the first King of England.
So he's like, it's like John Wick. Like,
yeah.
Like, in order to get out, you have to do an impossible task.
Yeah, this is his impossible task. Like, they're like, oh, go, but they really wanted to. They really wanted to attack Britain. It wasn't, like, to fuck him up. They really wanted to. And he was like, no, that's a terrible idea. Like, there's no way we can compete with their navy. Because at this point, everybody on the globe knows the reputation of the British Navy. It's like, this is or even past the American Revolution. Like, everyone knows what the British Navy can do. It's just, you don't do that.
Right.
So he's like, no, not going to happen. So he proposes a second thing, something that can still affect the British, but he's like, we're going to go a different route. So he says, we're going to invade Egypt and fuck with their trade routes to India.
Okay.
That's what we're going to do. And
the Silk Roads.
Yeah, Silk Roads. Yeah. It leads to, I think they call it the Battle of the Pyramids.
Okay.
Which is pretty successful at first. He gets in there and he starts to really fuck things up, but then, like, literally the worst thing that could happen happens. And the British Navy comes sailing up the Nile.
Okay.
And, like, literally just devastate him. Mm-hmm. Like, in one battle, they, like, fucking just wreck him. And they're fighting on a river.
Yeah,
like,
they pigeonholed him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the Nile goes straight into the pyramids.
Yeah.
And there's nowhere for him to go. So he actually goes more north and tries. He's like, okay, well, now I'm just going to attack the Ottomans. Mm-hmm. Which is like, again, don't do that. Because we know what the Ottomans can do, too. So he tries attacking the Ottomans a bunch. That doesn't go well. He gets a really big defeat in Israel until he finally... I think you're going to touch on this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, France is getting fucked up.
Right.
Like, left, right, and center.
Mm-hmm.
And Napoleon does this really fucked up thing where he just... leaves his army in Israel.
Oh.
And just goes back to France.
He abandoned
his army. He just left them there. Like, I know you, I think you mentioned, like, he was called back.
Yeah.
But he didn't take his arm. He, like, whoever was left of his army, he was just like, peace.
You guys stay here, fight the good fight.
Yeah, hold it down. I gotta go help the main guys.
That's fucked up.
It's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Because the first obvious answer is, like, not without my troops.
Yeah, take. Yeah. Don't you want to show up with an army?
Yeah.
Like, but he just, it said he just abandoned them. And I was like, okay, this seems really fucking shitty, but okay. So you're going to dive into more of that, but basically he gets back there. Whatever happens with that happens. It leads up to what is called the coup of 18 Brumaire in 1797, where basically him and a group of three or four people, they basically overthrow the directory and instill a government with three consuls or consuls with him as number one. So it's okay, this is irony number two in my book. When we talk about Robespierre, I don't know if you remember this, but the reason Robespierre's downfall started is because people were starting to get a little fucking weird that he wanted to, like, start a weird, powerful triumvirate.
Right.
But they're cool with it now.
I'll explain why.
Okay.
Because there's...
Because they were like, oh, Robespierre wants to start a triumvirate or make himself dictator.
There's a lot of steps in there.
Okay.
There's a lot of nefarious steps that he took to make that happen.
But they were all, like, but the thing is, they saw it from a mile away of Robespierre.
Right.
But then Napoleon comes in, he's like, oh, it's not a triumvirate. It's a three-person consul, but I'm consul number one.
Exactly.
So it's like, and they're like, oh, that sounds much better. Mm-hmm. Much better. Yeah, yeah, Robespierre still sucks.
Yeah.
Like, what? Yeah. Like,
he's like, they're like alive at the same time.
Yeah, I know. It's like
they're right there.
No, I think Robespierre's already dead at this point.
Is he really?
Yeah, he was already killed at this point.
Oh, what?
It was because this is after the French Revolution.
This should have been like 1799, right?
This is 1799, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Robespierre's already dead at this
point. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But still, like, right after. Like, they probably knew each other. Like, but, like, now wasn't, like, consul sounds better.
Right.
It's like, okay. So, yeah. Three-person consul... with him as first consul, which is basically leader.
Mm-hmm.
By 1802, there's a constitutional amendment which makes him first consul for life.
Okay.
Which is pretty much cementing it. And then, like, literally that year, he basically just crowns himself emperor.
Right.
And then you got Emperor Little Naps.
Little Nap.
Which is now the French Empire.
Yeah, there we
go. Yeah, obviously, I know you're going to backtrack a little bit to give us some more inkling into that.
Yeah, for sure.
I just wanted to get up to the point of him becoming Emperor Napoleon.
Yeah, consul and then
Emperor. Yeah, he may have had a consort. I don't know.
I think it was he may have been consort, consul, then emperor.
Like, he was a consort?
Yeah.
He was
like a queen consort.
He was someone's bitch.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
He was like...
I know he has a wife. He definitely has a wife.
Yeah. But. Concubine, consort, consult, emperor.
Emperor.
Yeah.
Wow. See, we've been doing life all wrong.
Yeah, you got SMDs to get the
job. I
gotta
go back and become a concubine.
That's how you make it in Hollywood.
You got SMDs.
Yeah.
You gotta pay your dues.
Yeah, it's Hollywood, baby.
Oh, jeez.
It's showbiz, baby.
you gotta take one for the team.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break.
Is it me? Okay, cool.
And then we'll get into yours.
All right, we'll be right back.
Okay. Hey, guys, this is Cody and
CJ
from Justice Time Machine. Just doing another shout-out for our buddy Eli, who did our logo for the podcast. If you guys like what you saw with our logo and are looking for any kind of graphic design or logo work, he's really a reliable source to go to. It's ELIS_trashcan on Instagram. Really cool guy, really quick with his work, and very talented. And, you know, he'll work within your budget. He's very understanding and reasonable. So, yeah, reach out to him if you guys need any work done. It's definitely worth it, and have a good one.
This is our New Year's episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Welcome to 20 in just under, what, T-minus 6 hours for us. It's going to be 2020 round two.
2020 round two.
It's going to be the same, and it's going to suck.
You see that that video where it's like it's like this guy walks in, he's like, all right, guys, you finally made it to the 2020 prelims. Yeah. Now it's time for 2020.
For the boss level.
For the main season. Yeah. And like, they do like, it's like the John Cena intro. Yeah. And like, they start coming in and it's just like different catastrophes. It's like alien invasion. Yeah. New disease.
What's happening, buddy? Yeah, bury your money. All right. So, Napoleon.
Yes, Napoleon.
Napoleon Bonaparte.
Bonafide.
Bonafide. So, he's born in August 15th, 1769.
Yes.
Nice. 69. Good job. And he died May 5th, 1821. Cinco de Mayo, baby.
Oh, he did die on Cinco de Mayo. Cinco de Mayo. Was it Cinco de Mayo then?
No. Well, it's still the 5th of May.
Yeah.
I don't know about the backstory. I don't know how long ago the tradition started.
I don't either.
Yeah. Anyways, he was a Leo, like me.
Great.
I'm a Leo.
Great.
He was 5'6", of average height.
Like you.
Well, I'm not 5'6". I'm
I thought he was 5'7".
I'm 5'8".
Maybe he was 5'7" with heels.
he was 5'7" with a lift.
Okay.
French-Italian.
Okay.
I'm French-Italian.
There you go.
A lot of similarities for me.
He didn't have a beard, though.
No beard.
No.
Nah, he's very...
Clean-shaven.
Clean cut, too. Clean he had a very slender jawline.
Yeah.
A long but defined chin.
Yes.
He looked a lot like his wife, Josephine.
He did. Yeah. He also has this really great picture of him where he's just slumped in a chair and he's like...
Him and his wife looked exactly alike.
Maybe that's why he married her.
It was like when Seinfeld dated the female Seinfeld. Yeah. It's like the same thing. Maybe it's, he just thought he was looking in a mirror.
He's like, damn, I'm pretty.
I'm just going to propose to this mirror.
No, she talks. Yeah.
So, well, that's where the comparison stops. Yeah. Because, anyways, so average male height was 5'7 at that time. For a male, and 5'3 for a female. And there's actually a really fun fact, according to Professor Steckel. Professor Steckel.
Okay.
Who actually researched this topic of, like, you know, height variances between the years, or over the years. Humans, on average, shrunk 2.5 inches from 1200 to 1600.
Oh.
And this was due to the warmer weather in the Middle Ages.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So warmer weather made them like, we don't need to be so tall.
Yeah, that's why everybody in Florida, that's why everything's bigger in Texas.
There you go. Wait, but it's hot in Texas too.
Yeah. Like, well, warmer weather, taller. The colder weather of the 15th and 16th centuries shrunk people down 2.5 inches.
But you just said they shrunk because it was warm in the Middle Ages.
No, they were taller in the Middle Ages because it was warmer in the Middle Ages.
Oh.
And they shrunk 2.5 inches over that 400-year gap from 1200 to 1600. Because the weather started to get colder.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, all right.
I don't get it.
Well, get hit up Professor Steckel on Twitter.
All right, Professor Steckel.
Professor Steckel. Right. So, Napoleon Bonaparte's name is actually, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I actually have this like weird idea of naming three pets using his name.
Okay.
But I'd had to use, in order to make it work, I had to use Benjamin Franklin's name, too.
Okay.
So this might get really confusing, but I want to name three pets the two names of Napoleon Bonaparte and Benjamin Franklin, but alternating the first part of each name. Okay. So the first pet would be named Napoleon Ben.
Okay.
The second pet would be named Boner Jammin. And the third pet would be named Party Franklin. I used to have I don't know.
Okay.
While I was writing it, just reminded me that was like one of my harebrained ideas that I used to have. But now, actually, I just want one pet, and I want it to be named Napoleon, and okay. Naps for short.
Naps, okay.
All right. So, I don't know where I was going with that, but anyways. So, he held five titles over 16 years of leadership, from 1799 to 1815. He was the first consul of France from 1799 to 1804, the president of the Italian public from 1802 to 1805, the protector of the Confederation of the Rhine from 1806 to 1813, the King of Italy from 1805 to 1814, and the Emperor of the French from 1804 to 1815.
Jeez.
And these are all split into like different stints here and there, so some overlap and some underlap. But those were just all of the documentary.
Yeah, films. I know he was the king of Italy. Yeah.
So where you ended in his, you know, conquest.
His little coup.
His coup in Egypt. Yes. And Italy. So Napoleon was out of town, basically on the road or in ships at this point.
Yeah.
So when France started to fall, due to the European monarchies that were attacking on all sides, mm-hmm. He started to get correspondence that France was kind of in trouble. And this started in 1799. He learned that while he was away, France was getting straight footbucked in the War of the Second Coalition. So the War of the Second Coalition was basically all the European monarchies except for Prussia versus France.
Okay.
And to be more succinct, I guess, it's Britain, Austria, Russia, the Ottomans, Portugal, Naples, and Germany versus France.
Okay.
Oh, and Sweden, too. And Sweden.
And Sweden, yeah. Sweden got in on there.
Versus France.
Yeah.
The European monarchies were simply trying to stop the rapid French expansion at this point.
Okay.
So they were forced to sign a treaty in 1801, halting the expansion, but France still at that point got to keep all their territory gained.
That they already got.
Yeah, that they already had. The war of the against the monarchies was led by Jean-Baptiste Kleber.
Okay.
Napoleon missed a letter that said, come back. Like, baby, come back.
Baby, come back. Yeah,
you can blame it all on me.
He didn't get the letter?
He didn't get that letter. So when he came back to France, people thought he just abandoned them.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So Jean-Baptiste did pretty well in the war, though, on the French side.
Yeah.
And he held them back as strong as he could. But as a whole, they were still weak.
Hmm.
No pun intended there. Because they were out of money at this point from their conquests, and they were mad at Napoleon for not being there for the
But he's like, I never got a letter.
He's like, yeah, I missed that memo.
Yeah,
did I
get that memo?
Right, so they were mad at him for that. Most of the people judging Napoleon were the French Directory. Like you said, it was a 5-member government that handles like the finances, the war efforts, the foreign policies, you know, and what a fucking government does.
Yeah.
So, Naps wasn't really happy with the negative reception because he thought he was going to come back more as like a war hero.
Exactly, yeah.
Even though his attempts were failed in Egypt and that kind of stuff, he thought he still made a lot of, learned a lot of things, had a lot of connections.
Well, and he went over there originally with a pretty good reputation.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So he thought he was going to come back and it was going to be like a hero's welcome. But
it was not.
It really didn't happen that way. So he took over the French Directory with 4 other guys. So he basically replaced the 5 with his own 5.
Okay.
Which then were whittled down to
the 3.
3, exactly. Yes. But being the statesman that he was, he still put it to a vote with the people instead of doing a total coup.
Yeah.
It was still a voted on issue, which he won in a landslide.
Okay.
Now this is where it gets fucking complicated.
Okay.
Okay. Even if it's not already.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
So he won in a landslide popular vote, which was 3 million for him and his 4 other friends to 1,500 versus the original 5.
Okay.
Okay, in the French Directory.
Hmm.
The Constitution upheld this vote, and Napoleon's now basically the dictator of France, because it's like a dictatorship
first
now.
First consul,
yeah. But it's still technically a dictatorship. Since the 4 other guys, they just couldn't fucking control him.
Yeah.
So this type of leadership that he started enacting as the consul, or dictator, was called dictatorship by plebiscite.
Okay.
This means a dictatorship directed by direct voting on specific topics. So if you're going to vote on topic like a constitutional change, if it's a popular vote, then you win.
Okay.
So it's not like voting in the sense, or like government in the sense of like voting different parties in play.
Yeah, it's all popular vote.
But you're voting terms into play.
Okay.
So you're voting changes to the constitution, you're choosing like who to go to war with. So all those are votes.
Okay.
Not just who's in charge to make those decisions.
Okay.
Got it?
So he gets to just stick around forever.
However, all these changes were made by rigged voting by Napoleon's fucking brother.
Oh, cool.
So Napoleon's Joseph? Brother... No, not Joseph, the other one. Okay. The L guy. Lily.
Oh, Lucien.
Lucien.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lucien rigged.
I like that name.
Yeah, Lucien's kind of cool. Very netherworld.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Lucifer?
So, everything he put to a vote won by 90%+.
Great.
Which was unreal.
He's like, what's the percentage we want? Oh, we got 150% of the votes.
Right.
Sick.
One of the votes was only distributed to 150 million people, but they got 300 million votes in return.
Great.
So they doubled the amount of votes. Just the amount. Well, they doubled the amount of people.
Yeah.
Really. So they cloned all of them.
Sweet.
Yeah. So they went to the local cemetery, took down all the names. They voted for any move.
That Aaron A. Aronson.
So to sum this up, just quickly, he rigged the initial election, drafted a new constitution which would allow him to become a dictator by popular vote, rigged the vote for that constitutional change, and then became dictator.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yes, a lot of layers.
Yeah.
Thanks to Lucian. Pretty fucking...
That's why I could never become a dictator, because, like, I don't even understand how you did that. Like, like, fuck, dude. Like...
Yeah, I'm used to just falling upwards.
Yeah.
Oh, I get a promotion? Great.
Great. Like,
thank
cool.
you so much. Wasn't trying, but I appreciate it.
Super appreciated. Like,
so, it's 1799 now, and he's the first consul of France. And, I mean, they had to see this coming. Like, they had
obvious.
To see...
Yeah.
Like,
you think...
Like, it's the fucking Napoleon. Like, you're dealing with, like, one of the greatest strategists or strategists.
Yeah.
And he's off fighting all your battles. You've got to see him coming back and, like, regaining some sort of control.
Yeah, you told him he could go invade Britain if you wanted to.
His signature is just his fucking name underlined.
Yeah.
Like,
is
yeah.
It really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It's, of course he's going to fuck it up. All right? Jesus. So the second coalition war was still going on, and Napoleon kind of finished what they started at this point once he took over as consort.
Yeah.
That's where your kind of part, you know, was ending on.
Did you just call him a consort?
Did I call him a consort? Yeah. Consul? Whatever. Corsicant, whatever it is.
Corsicant. Croissant?
Croissant? Yeah, that's, let's call him the first croissant.
He's the first croissant.
Yeah. Right. The cronut. So it was still going on, and he started kind of leading the troops himself into battle. He crossed the Swiss Alps into Italy, and it's here where 24,000 of his troops defeated 30,000 Austrian troops.
Mm.
And that was in the Battle of Marengo, which is his first, like, strong victory.
Yeah.
Which later led to the treaty in 1801 that I mentioned earlier. Shortly after, in 1802, the Treaty of Amiens was signed, and that was the rest of Europe was basically going to get together and say... We also want to stop France's expansion. So let's, like, cut him out here, even though he gained all that.
Yeah.
All that territory. Okay. So this brings us to the French Empire.
Yeah.
Really. So this is he got his chops in the Battle of Marengo, and now he's really getting to exercise his strategies.
Yeah. I do want to say something that's, like, very interesting with Napoleon, which you kind of have to give him credit for, is... When you see in other historical, like, monarchies or emperors, like, taking over lands and stuff, like, a lot, you don't hear about them being on the front lines.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but Napoleon was.
Yeah.
Like, he was leading the army taking over these lands, mm-hmm. not just sitting at the capital. Like, right. He was, like, very, like, Alexander the Great-ish.
Right.
Like, which is just weird.
He wasn't doing anything physical. But he was doing all the battle.
But he's there. Yeah. Like, he's there. It's not like, you know, it's not like fucking our president's, you know, it's not like FDR was fucking in no man's land.
Right.
Like, during World War II. Yeah. Like, or maybe no man's land was World War I. Either way, it's like, it just doesn't happen. The leaders aren't on the front lines anymore. Like,
right.
Or actually, not anymore. Like, even back then, they weren't.
It's another, Star Wars reference, where he's doing, like, battle meditation.
Yeah.
You know, like, but not from afar, but he's, like, on the front line.
He's on the front line,
and he's,
yeah.
like, meditating the
bolstering
battle.
Bolstering the troops and, you know, giving them morale. Like,
you guys can do it. A little punch on the shoulder here and there.
Mm.
Yeah. Hey, bud, doing a great job. Keep dying out there for me. So that brings us to the French Empire. The first French Empire. A New Hope, I guess, if you want to call it. If we're talking Star Wars
The Frempire starts back.
Yeah, the Frempire starts back. That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right. So this is 1804 to 1814, and this is 10... fucking years that looks like the first 10 minutes of Saving Private Ryan.
Okay.
So it's just a fucking bloodbath for 10 years.
Awesome.
And we're not going to get into the gore here. We're just going to talk about the battles themselves.
Okay.
Because we all know what happens in wartime.
Yeah, it's gory.
People are slaughtered.
People losing legs.
Yeah.
Disfigurements.
It's like that movie Gettysburg or whatever, the guy, like, has to take off his own leg and, or no, put his, oh, what is that? Dances with Wolves or whatever? Where the guy has to, like, put his boot over his, like, gnarly fucked up leg. I don't know. It's gross. I forgot what it was. I saw it young, and I'm scarred by it, and that's why I missed
it.
So, at the beginning, people basically just kept trying to fucking assassinate him. And just imagine...
Makes sense.
Just imagine the butterfly effect that would have had if he actually was assassinated.
Oh, yeah. It would have changed everything.
Amazing.
Everything.
Right? Just incredible if somebody succeeded. But nobody did succeed. There was about 6 attempts, and the 2 most popular ones where the dagger plot, and then the plot of the Infernal Machine.
Whoa.
That one's cool. That one's really cool. So, the dagger plot, it was basically unknown assailants. Nobody knows who it was, but they planned to cut him up after an opera, like Batman's parents, basically. Like, they just want to fuck him up right when he walked out of an opera. And the plot of the internal machine, it was a 25-barrel sawed-off shotgun that was filled with bullets, flammable materials, and shrapnel, and it was named by its creator, the Infernal Machine.
A
25-barrel sawed-off shotgun.
That someone's holding?
It was a wheeled up.
Oh, it's a cannon!
But it's a 25-barrel shotgun. So it has 25 different barrels on it, and it was held together by a ring, like a soldered ring, that was filled with whatever.
And at the end is just one trigger, so guys are like, BAM!
Yeah, they fueled it up like the fucking...
What the fuck is the point in that? Who made that dumb thing?
I don't know. It was an amazing machine.
They could have just rolled a cannon.
Yeah, but it was...
One barrel.
But it was huge, unpredictable, and it covered a big area with a lot of shit. So you know shotguns are like a big blast?
It's spread, yeah.
A cannon's a cannonball.
Yeah.
So this is a spray. Yeah, it's a spray.
They could have just planted a bomb.
Sure. Yeah.
It just sounds so grossly inefficient.
Like, yeah.
Some guy just rolling up and like, how are you going to kill... Strap every barrel you have to this fucking wheel.
It's a very loony.
You know how many hilts and triggers we have? One.
It's a Looney Tune size gun.
It's fucking Coyote, Wile E. Coyote to the max.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah, it was built by Acme.
Yes.
So it killed basically everybody around him except for Napoleon, his wife.
Great.
So it killed the six people that he was with. Napoleon, Josephine got away, and it wounded 26 other people at the same time. So
it's like the Project Valkyrie when they tried to kill Hitler with a bomb,
right?
In a briefcase, and it blew up the entire fucking room with the table covered in.
Exactly. So he was fine, but this is two. That was only two out of six attempts.
Jesus.
So he used those attempts as leverage to build an even new leadership model based on Roman imperialism.
Mm.
So he changed the constitution again.
Great role model.
Not before holding it to a vote, which he won by 99%.
Of course!
Clearly. Thanks, Lucian, again.
Lucian, back again.
So he won by a landslide, and he was coronated as the Emperor of the French. Fun fact, when he was coronated by the Pope at that time, he was already wearing a golden wreath on his head, so he put the crown on Josephine's head.
What? Why?
Because he got the crown from the Pope.
Yeah.
Held it above his head. Realized he couldn't get it over his Roman golden wreath because he was a big fan.
Why couldn't he just put the wreath on his?
And he put the crown on her head, which a lot of people thought he was making her queen.
I mean, essentially, she was.
She was.
Yeah.
But it was more of like a weird display at that time.
That's really odd. Yeah. Okay. Like, dude, get over your wreath. Like, no one gives a shit. Yeah,
because he was really big into Roman imperialism, so he wanted the Roman golden
wreath. I can't take this off. Like, you gotta make a smaller crown.
Sorry, no choice, guys.
Yeah.
It'll ruin my hair if I take it off.
Yep. Sorry, Pope.
So, Great Britain, at this point, was the first to kind of break the Treaty of Amiens. And they started the Third Coalition, and this was against France in 1803. So the Third Coalition was the United Kingdom, Russia, Naples, Sicily, Sweden, and ironically enough, like you said, it's a lot of irony, the Holy Roman Empire.
Oh, cool.
So even though he was a huge fan of them, they still formed a coalition.
So the Pope went back and was like, fucking move my crown.
Okay.
Like...
So let's sidebar real quick.
Okay.
Him and the Popes did not get along.
Shocker.
Right?
Shocker.
So he used to make fun of the Popes. He used to take the Pope's crown off and dance around with it and pretend he was the Pope.
What?
Literally documented fact.
Well, that's just rude.
The Pope Pius before him, he stole all of his money and then banned him.
What?
Wait, no. He stole all of his money and then got him in trouble for being penniless and then banned him.
From France?
Because the Popes had a huge problem with Napoleon because Napoleon wanted a religious-free France.
Yeah.
Not religious-free.
But he was super Catholic.
No, but he wanted a freedom of religion in France.
Okay.
He was like one of the first, not atheists, but like what would you say?
But
like,
he was Catholic.
He was one of the first Democrats. Okay. Who wanted freedom of religion.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you don't go about it by, like, insulting, like, it just sounds like a child. Like, hey, yeah. I got your crown.
Exactly.
Hey.
It's very like, much like that.
It's like, I'm pretty sure they're all taller than you. Like, stop taking shit you can't reach.
So, like every pope just hated him.
I can't blame them. Like, it sounds like, he sounds like a fucking, that really annoying fucking cousin who just touches everything in your fucking house.
Right.
Like,
do you have any games on your phone?
No.
Get the fuck out of here.
Get out of here.
Don't touch my phone with your fucking shitty fingers.
Can I play your GameCube? No. Get the fuck out.
My GameCube. Like, get out, Tanner.
Get out, Tanner. He's French Tanner.
Fucking Tanner. All right.
He shows up to the Vatican and all the fucking Tanners here.
So the Third Coalition is where Napoleon really gets to flex his strategic muscles here.
Okay.
He had military strategies that were literally described as masterpieces. And it was specifically in the Ulm campaign, where it was swift maneuvers, detailed inventories, and incessant mixtures of close-range cannons, muskets, and bayonets were used by the front lines, and Napoleonic tactics at this point were using the physics that he learned while abroad in Egypt to figure out when and where to fire each weapon and where to put your men consistently to get the most impact out of what you're firing.
See, he wasn't just throwing bodies in and shooting wildly. He was really thinking about his shots.
He basically stood back with a telescope. He was there. He was on the battlefield.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With a telescope, using his notebook, and timing things out.
That's fucking smart.
I know. Like, so he was like, okay, well, now the cannons fire there. And then, okay, now you go in with the muskets. And now, once they're weakened, now you go in with the bayonets.
Dude, he's the ultimate dungeon master.
Yes.
He's in there. He's like, and then a manticore comes in. And
like smashing G.I. Joes together. Yeah.
And then I come in and I take the Pope's crown.
Yeah. Yeah. We probably did that as a little kid. Like, kid's going to be the fucking Antichrist.
This guy's going to be fucking nuts.
So he was actually the first person recorded in history to use physics to win wars.
Hey, it's smart. It works.
Amazing.
Physics.
So he counted like the ranges and the trajectories of each musket, each cannon, and the effects of the bayonets in close combat. He was like a miser. He was like orchestrating. Yeah. It was like an opera. Like
very much. Like it was a show to him.
Yeah. It was like if Fantasia was rated R.
Just picture Mickey when he's on the cliff and he like goes like this and the waves come up and it's just blood.
Wave blood.
Fucking the brooms are just cutting limbs off.
God, just cuts that scene in The Shining where the elevator opens up.
Yeah.
Blood comes out.
It's just like death and death and death. Right. Fire the cannons. Death and death.
Okay, so shortly after that, he obviously killed.
Yeah.
Destroyed in the Third Coalition. War, and then he kind of headed to Prussia. So him with 180,000 troops basically picked apart the Prussian army.
Okay.
And here's how he did it. So, actually, sorry. So he had 180,000 troops when he went to Prussia.
Okay.
What he did was he first attacked to the east, and then he sent the other half, so 60,000, to the west, and just started working inwards on Prussia using the same aforementioned battle tactics.
That just sounds...
And just got closer and closer and closer.
Like, okay, I just want to, like... Sorry. Mm-hmm. That sounds so exhausting to me, because if you think about it back then, like... They don't have cell phones. Mm-hmm. They don't have, like, fucking fast ways to, like, move troops.
Right.
You're talking about he attacked Prussia from the east. And Prussia's already to the east of France.
Right.
So he went all the way fucking around.
Right.
Like, that must have taken forever.
It's like one of these things, you send a letterman, what, Kevin Costner, the postman.
Yeah.
You send him out there and say, in 3 days' time, you attack.
Like,
or something
God
like that.
Damn,
and
dude.
Even if the letter gets there a day late, you're still only one day late.
Yeah.
You're just playing your strengths.
Yeah, it just sounds like so exhausting to send an army that
far. 180,000 men in that battle in Prussia captured 140,000 Prussians.
Dang.
Only 100, they captured 140,000.
That's
Prussians,
like one guy per
Prussian prisoner.
That's like 1-to-1.
Over 1-to-1.
Yeah. He's like, I'm your guard.
Yeah.
Like, single person.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's just under 1-to-1. Yeah. It's basically 1-to-1.
Jesus.
Like, hello, come with me.
Everyone gets their personal prisoner.
Buddy system.
Buddy system. Please report to your personal officer.
They also Oh, are you mean? Yeah, come to me. So they also got like a lot of more arms, like 2,000 cannons, a fuck ton of ammunition.
No infernal machines.
No, probably a couple infernal machines.
Jesus.
One historian, David Chandler, said of Prussia, "Never has the morale of an army been more completely shattered."
Oh, rude.
So not only did you take my men, you took my soul, buddy.
Damn, dude.
You took my will to live.
Kick him in the nuts when he's down. Like...
Another fun fact about Prussia, despite all of that, Prussia still refused to negotiate terms of their defeat.
Well, you have to.
So like, they didn't want to talk about
it. You gotta refuse at that point.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of, like, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Hey, didn't you just get beat? I don't want to talk about it.
It didn't happen.
But they wanted to do that because they wanted to give a chance for Russia to step in. And start taking over of their part of that coalition.
Okay.
All right.
Wait for big brother Russia.
Yeah, big red.
Big red.
Yeah, it's getting beat up and then going to get your big brother just to beat up the bullies for you. So Napoleon offered, when they did that, Napoleon offered to join forces with Russia as long as the terms said that they still got to slap around Prussia whenever they wanted.
Oh, Jesus!
So he's like, I'll join forces with Russia. I know they're going to Russia to wait for them to come in, but he went to Russia too and said, can't we just do a coalition together? But one of his staunch terms, and he would not give in on this term, is that he got to fuck around with Prussia as much as he wanted.
So he's like, okay, so he goes to Russia, he goes to like the Tsar at the time, is like, mm-hmm. Hey, like, we can fight till the cows come home.
Yeah.
I'll have a one-on-one war with you.
Yeah.
I just really want to fucking kick his door in like, every time I want.
He wanted them and Russia to go to war together.
Oh, be allies.
Be allies.
Okay.
But a part of his, just a part of the terms was he still got to shit on Prussia whenever he wanted.
What's the guy against Prussia?
And then Russia politely declined.
Okay.
And they were like, no, it's still my little brother.
Only I get to beat my little brother up.
Yeah, exactly. Only I kick my brother's ass. But still, at this point, it didn't matter. Half of Prussia was gone, and Napoleon gained a new 1,000 miles of French territory.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
So while continuing talks with Russia, because he was still being a diplomat at this point, he then set his sights on Portugal, and things got kind of messy in Portugal.
That's going right the opposite way.
Yeah. And this is the funniest.
Well, because you gotta go through Spain.
Yeah,
there's no other way.
Exactly, you gotta go through Spain to get to Portugal. But this is the funniest shit. Ready?
Okay.
So Napoleon sent not himself, but a bunch of troops to Portugal, like 100,000 men.
Okay.
And they just started walking in the town. Okay. French troops just walked in the town, the record scratch, everybody in Portugal just kind of stopped to look at them, and then went on with their day. It was called the most bloodless takeover.
They didn't care?
They didn't give a shit. Not a single drop of blood was shed. They just occupied Portugal. And everybody was like, okay. No fights. No, come on in.
Huh. Yeah. Like they listened?
Yeah, it was like fucking Ellis Island. They just came in.
But the Portuguese like submitted?
Here's where it gets. Okay. That's it gets kind of messy.
Like maybe just in that town, they were like, I was selling bread, bro.
No, but it took a year for them to get pissed that they were there. But at first, they just sauntered in.
So they didn't care so much that they just didn't give a shit.
Didn't give a shit.
Like.
Yeah. So it wasn't even the people in power. It was... The Portuguese authorities let it happen, and it wasn't until a year later that the people rose up to challenge the French invasion because they got fed up with Napoleon after he declared his dipshit brother Joseph king of Spain.
Ah, Joseph.
Yeah, Joseph's the dipshit brother.
Oh, yes. Oh, king of Spain or king of Portugal?
King of Spain.
Oh.
Yeah. But that's still a part of it. They still got too close.
Yeah, but, like, it's just weird. Like, you said all your troops into Portugal, and you're like, King of Spain!
But it was, I think it was more of, like, it was a Catholic thing. It was, like, a religious thing. Mm. So it was under the same Pope.
It's just like, you're gonna go for Portugal, fine, cool, whatever. Fucking whatever. Don't just all of a sudden piss off Spain.
Right.
Like.
Yeah. Yeah, and Joseph Bonaparte is, like, the fucking Danny Wahlberg of this whole situation. He's the worst Wahlberg brother.
Oh my god, poor dude.
So
worse than Steven?
After that, you know, Steven's the worst. Isn't
yeah,
it? Yeah. Donnie's second worst.
Yeah,
he goes Mark, Donnie, Steven.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Anyway,
have you ever seen that fucking clip of Family Guy where it's Alec Baldwin
feeding all of his brothers with his teeth.
Yes, yes.
And he's like, drink up, Steven, you're the weakest.
Oh, wait, no, Steven's a Baldwin. I was talking about the Wahlbergs.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I said, I was talking but about
there
Steven Baldwin.
Is there a Steven Wahlberg?
No, Steven Baldwin.
It's just Mark and Donnie.
Yeah, it's just
and
Mark
it's and Alec and Steven, and there's another Baldwin.
Yeah, I was thinking of the Baldwins.
Okay, that's okay.
I fucked up my joke.
Same, literally interchangeable. Same, yeah. Same fucking.
There's more Baldwins than Steve and then Wahlbergs.
It doesn't matter. Here's where I get really confused about this whole thing. So, okay. Yeah, Fifth Coalition War, same shit. Bunch of countries versus France trying to stop the expansion. Russian War, you'll get into
it. Yeah, I got that.
Sixth Coalition War, yada, yada,
I
yada.
I think that's the Russian one.
It's just tons of coalition wars. Yeah. Everybody against the French Revolution. So, here's what really upset me, and you could tell in my notebook
because
where words
it.
Got big. Was he bad or good?
He was bad.
He was bad.
He was bad.
But if we're comparing apples to apples in Justice Time Machine terms,
okay, he's no.
Okay, no. Okay. But if we're comparing apples to oranges, he's the fucking Antichrist.
Yeah, he's not like. The thing with the people we cover, you can't compare apples to apples all the time because it's. Mm-hmm. Different time periods, different situations, different standards. Is he a fucking, what you call it, the fucking girl who was fucking freezing housemaids in the fucking snow and, like, ripping their skin off?
Oh, yeah, Bathory.
Yeah, Bathory. Is he Bathory? No, he's not Bathory.
He's not Elizabeth Bathory bad.
But he's fucking still bad.
He's still a liar. He's still a cheater.
Yeah,
he's still really mean to that Pope.
He's really mean to that Pope.
Really mean to the Pope. Whoops, I'm stealing his shit and then making fun of him for it.
Right.
He's maniacal. He's manipulative.
Yeah.
He's, like, he won't fucking stop just trying to conquer the planet.
Right, right.
Like, not even the planet. He just wants to fuck up Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, which is like, bro, like, calm the fuck. And it's, okay, here's what makes him worse than a lot of other people. He's not like, and don't take this as me trying to, like, put this person in a better light.
Mm-hmm.
He's not like Hitler,
mm-hmm.
where Hitler had a goal of like a purification goal. Mm-hmm. This guy has no goal.
Right.
His goal is just to fucking fuck with everyone and like just conquer whatever he wants.
All.
It is just for him.
Yeah.
Like, at least Hitler kind of like, maybe he was lying, but kind of like put under that ruse of like a greater Germany, greater German people, like for a pure people. Napoleon was like, yeah, I want it.
I think the best comparison would be like Alexander the Great.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, because he wanted
for,
it.
For Alexander wept because there were no more worlds to conquer. It's
yeah.
Kind of like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Is that a quote?
Yeah.
Oh, I really like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alexander literally wouldn't stop until he was stopped.
Yeah.
Napoleon would have never stopped.
He would have never stopped.
Never stopped.
Yeah.
I mean, neither would have Hitler, but still. Napoleon was doing
Hitler had big plans.
Napoleon was doing it for Napoleon's sake.
Right.
And that's like where you get just justifiably bad.
Yeah.
Like, or unjustifiably bad.
I agree. I just, like, at the end of my notes, I was, like, really divided.
Because
but that just drove it home for me.
He wasn't doing this for the French.
No.
There was no, like, great French cause.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
just land. Territory.
Just land. Territory. Yeah.
And he sacrificed thousands of bodies.
It was very, funny enough, it was very czarist. Like, I know I've mentioned this a lot, like, the rules that czars have to live by. To be a successful czar, you have to conquer.
Well, it's Roman. It's Roman.
It's very Roman. It's just for the sake of expansion.
That's
all it is.
Yeah.
And, like, that is bullshit. Like, why can't you just live and let live?
Yeah. Guns N' Roses it.
Yeah.
Or is that Live and Let Die?
That's Live and Let Die.
Dude, the opposite Guns N' Roses.
He's a Live and Let Die guy.
Yeah.
Like, I live, I let you die.
It'll be Knives and Weeds.
Yeah.
Guns N' Roses, Knives and Weeds.
Knives and Weeds.
All right.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk about his downfall.
All right, be right back. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Justice Time Machine. We appreciate it very much so. I want to take this opportunity to also appreciate another person. I hope that line of logic followed. His name is Johnny Niddle, and he is the person responsible for doing all of our music. He did our theme song, he does all the transitions, and we couldn't be happier with his work. We think it's like absolutely wonderful. It's one of the greatest things that's happened to our podcast since it started. It's actually sounding much more professional and just all around better. So you should absolutely give me your business. Go to johnnyrk.com. That's Johnny RK, JohnnyRK.com. Or you can find him on all social media at Johnny RK. Go to Johnny Niddle, give him your money. He deserves every penny. Thank you, Johnny, and we'll see you next time.
Okay. Oh, actually, I gotta ring up my phone at some point.
Welcome back.
Hello, we're back. I'm still prepping. Okay, so we're gonna talk about Napoleon and his fucking downfall. Okay, so where you left off, wars left and right.
Mm-hmm.
Guy just won't stop. Mm-hmm. We kind of decided that's what makes him a bastard.
Yeah.
So his downfall officially starts with his invasion of Russia.
Right.
So, like you said, he tried to reach out to Russia to, like, make an alliance or whatever, and they, like, they said no. Like, they backed out of his, like, his coalition, whatever. So, in 1812, he was pissed. And he's like, well, then I'm coming for you then.
Mm-hmm.
So, he got over his whole little Prussia thing, and he goes for Russia. And this is where it just really starts to go bad for him. Which, I mean, we can kind of all, like, you literally say this about any fucking, like, tyrannical ruler in history, just leave Russia alone.
Yes.
Because the only people that can fucking survive in Russia are Russians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't go there. Like, yes. Don't do it.
If your name doesn't start with a Boris and end with a Yeltsin.
Yeah, or a Slav.
Or a Slav. Yeah, something like that.
Like, just
stay out.
Stay out. Like, you're not gonna succeed.
They're still scary.
Yeah, they're, yeah. Siberia is fucking terrifying. Yeah. Like, yeah. And this, okay, so Russia's strategy to dealing with Napoleon was fucking genius.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so good. So, he invades Russia with 600,000 men.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's a lot of fucking people.
Right.
Like, how many did you say he sent to Portugal?
180,000.
600,000 men. Mm-hmm. He invades Russia. And, of course, he's with them. Okay? Doing his little fucking D&D shit.
Mm-hmm.
Russians, their leadership had a really good strategy. So every time Napoleon advanced on a town or advanced on a pivotal point to attack, they just retreated.
Mm-hmm.
They just left.
Okay.
So it's like, Napoleon was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to
keep going.
Keep going.
Yeah.
They get to another town. They just retreat. Just luring him in and in and in.
And he fell for it.
He fell for it. He just kept going, thinking he was taking land, but they're like, right. No, we're giving you land.
Yeah.
Like, because once you get so far in, you ain't got nowhere to go.
Right.
Like, trying to, like, fucking trek through Siberia is a fucking death wish.
Right.
And
let the environment kill him.
That's basically what they did. They let the Russian winter do its fucking job.
Yeah.
And Napoleon just, like, started losing men just because of that.
Right.
And so he finally got, like, long story short, he got all the way to Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And thought, like, well, why take Moscow? They're fucking done, right? Like,
right.
Moscow is the fucking capital. But they didn't. They were already ahead of him. So not only did they back up even further, they evacuated, like, the entire city.
Of Moscow.
They evacuated civilians and everything. So Napoleon rolled up on a basically empty fucking city.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't enough for the Russians. They also burnt everything. They burnt all the fucking supplies.
Wow.
So Napoleon rolls up to an empty city and nothing to fuel his troops. There's no food. There's no, like, stuff, like, blankets. There's no water. They fucking destroyed it.
Okay.
So he rolls up to a fucking barren city.
Okay.
And
a ghost town.
A ghost town. And, like, the Russians were like, well, we'll destroy it before we let you have it.
Right.
We can rebuild it.
Right.
We know how to build it. We built this fucking city on rock and roll.
Yeah.
And built this city. And so Napoleon has nothing fucking left.
Mm-hmm.
So he tries to occupy Moscow for a little bit, and it just, like, but his troops are starving.
Like, what's the point?
There's no food. There's no reason to be here. So he finally has to fucking retreat. And he starts taking his troops back. And that's where Russia fucking kicks in.
Okay.
So they start retreating back through Siberia, back to France. And every step of the way, the Russians are just attacking them from behind.
Okay.
So they literally have to fight their way out.
So they trick them into running away.
They tricked them into running away and then made it fucking impossible to run away.
That's so good.
Fucking genius. It's like the smartest move I think I've ever heard. Because, like,
you're gonna march on Moscow, and Moscow is ultimately the end game.
Yeah.
It's the checkered flag of what Napoleon and his troops thought they were gonna get. Like,
yes.
This is the main city, and once we're here,
it's
game
done.
Over, it's ours.
Yeah.
They got there, realized there was nothing to gain
nothing
from it,
left.
Went back, and they just shot at them until they went back far enough.
Yeah, they basically just made them run back faster. Like,
Get out.
Yeah,
out.
Literally just, like, chasing, like, literally shooting at their heels. Like, that's when Napoleon realized, like, the strength of the Russian army because right. they were just fucking relentless.
So they didn't turn around and face them?
They couldn't because every time they would start to, like, reposition themselves, yeah. the Russians came out in full force.
Right.
So, like, because they didn't come to face with any Russian resistance mm-hmm. all the way in, so they didn't really, they weren't prepared for what the Russian army can do.
Right.
So when they had to leave and they were starving and yeah. weak and tired, they felt the full force.
Right.
And the Russian army was just fucking on them.
The long con.
So, basically, Napoleon left mm-hmm. Russia with 100,000 men.
Oh, wow. He lost 500,000?
He lost 500,000. Just leaving Russia.
Oh my god.
Like, there was only one battle on the way in mm-hmm. that had a lot of casualties yeah. on both sides. There was actually only one time where Russia decided to fight. But other than that, like, Napoleon just got obliterated trying to retreat.
Jeez.
Like,
it's like fucking Russia's Hotel California.
Seriously. Yeah, you check in, but you never leave.
Check in anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Yeah, and, like, he just got destroyed. So, that pretty much, like, fucked him up. So, on his way back, by that point, it's kind of like a repeat of Egypt.
Uh-huh.
So, while he was in Egypt, you know, we talked about how Russia, or France, was just getting destroyed from all sides.
Right.
By the other monarchies. Same thing. While he was in Russia, the Spanish, the Portuguese, the British, and the Swedes were fucking them up in every other front.
Okay.
Like, literally driving... They called the Iberian Peninsula. I don't know where that is on the map. The Iberian Peninsula, yeah. But they were basically... it wasn't the Swedes. It was just the Spanish, Portuguese, and the British.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like... Where you talk about where they moved into Portugal mm-hmm. and, like, put Joseph as, like, the king of Spain.
Yeah.
The British helped them fucking get them the fuck out. So that's the Iberian Peninsula.
Okay.
So the British stepped in and was like, okay, the Russians are fucking them over there. We're going to push them back over here.
Okay.
Okay. So then Napoleon gets cornered back in France.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At that point, in 1813, it's now the coalition of Russia, Prussia, Austria, Sweden. Which swoop in and capture Paris in 1814.
Okay.
So that's, like, another coalition of those four.
Is that the fifth or the sixth coalition?
I guess the sixth.
That's got to be the last one,
It's right? the last one,
It's the
yeah.
last coalition, okay.
So Russia, Prussia, Austria, and Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
So Britain and them push him away from the west,
mm-hmm.
Russia pushes them away from the east, and then once they get there, they swoop in.
Right.
And by 1814, they capture Paris.
Right.
And they force him to abdicate. And they banish him to, they banish him to Elba, which was a,
Idris?
Yeah, Idris Elba.
Okay.
Yeah, they banished him to Idris Elba's house. Elba was a, I think it was a French island or Italian island.
Okay.
They tried to make this, like, really easy for him. Like, hey, you're gonna go to Elba,
mm-hmm.
you're gonna be banished there, but we'll give you sovereignty over it.
Okay.
So you can just rule Elba and just... You can still be, like...
That's your land, bud.
That's your land. You yeah. have it. Kind of sucks for everyone on Elba.
Yeah. Like, well, who's this guy?
Yeah. And I think, Mark, again, you can correct me on this. It may be... I don't know if it's this exile or his final exile, but they separated him from his family at one point. So they banished him there, but they let his wife and his son stay in France.
It's a reasonable punishment. I mean, almost too nice.
It's like, why do you gotta take his family away, though? Like,
no, but, like... Just give, okay.
But to give him sovereignty over a place?
Giving him land at yeah. the end of his atrocities? It's a consolation prize.
I think they were trying to just, I think they were trying to really please him so he would just stop.
Just stop.
Just let it go.
Yeah.
Because you are really one nation and you're never going to beat all of us.
Right.
So just stop. And he was okay with it for a little bit, but literally less than a year later, he was just like, no.
I'm not happy
I'm
here.
I'm not done. So, less than a year...
I'm sick of this beautiful island.
Yes, I hate it. I don't like islands. Like, less than a year later, he, returns to France with, like, 1,000 supporters, which isn't a lot, but he does return to a huge amount of, like, applause.
Okay.
Like, the French people, like, welcome him back. Probably because they're, like, kind of tired of the Russians occupying Paris and
yeah.
shit. So they're like, yay, Napoleon, like, come back, like, save yeah. us. And so this is called the 100-year campaign, I think, or 100-year occupation.
Okay.
Not 100 a year. 100 day. Sorry.
100 day occupation.
Yeah, okay. Napoleon's like 150.
Yeah.
100 day.
Oh, sit down on my knee, son. Let me tell you about when I was 199.
Let me tell you a tale. So it's a 100 day campaign, basically, which ends with the Battle of Waterloo.
Right.
Which, for any common, like, historical fact, like anybody who's doing history in in class, everyone knows about the Battle of Waterloo. Uh-huh. It's the defeat of Napoleon. So he, leading up to that, he plans to attack preemptively. He goes back to France. He starts building support. He gets an army back.
Mm-hmm.
He's in France, like, making moves, and he's like, okay, I'm gonna attack each of these people preemptively before they really kind of know I'm back, because, like we said, like, communication moves slow.
Right, right.
And I'm gonna try to get them before they can, like, form another coalition and get me.
Okay.
And it worked at first. He had a couple wins, but it was a little too late.
Okay.
Like, at that point, they already banished him once. Yeah. Like, they were ready for Napoleon.
And they started catching on to, like, you know, some of their compatriots falling.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, like, at that point, like, Russia and Britain swept in real quick.
Right.
They rallied everyone else and was like, we've already done this once. Like, okay, yeah. Like, we try to be nice. It's fucking done.
Mm-hmm.
So at Waterloo, they fucking crush him. Like, just probably more than, like, he's ever felt ever.
Right.
And they force him to finally abdicate again.
Didn't kill him.
Didn't kill him. No. They make him abdicate, and they're like, okay, we're banishing you again.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're leaving France, because we can't even trust you to be here.
Right.
But this time, they banish him to a British island. Where
so they can keep an eye on him.
So they can keep an eye on him. So okay. They banish him to the island of St. Helena.
Okay.
Which I'm pretty sure is a My Chem song.
Michael Romance. Helena. Yeah.
It's called St. Helena, isn't it?
No, it's just Helena.
Helena. Okay, yeah. Maybe that's about a person then.
It's, is it the sad song?
Yeah, it's about, like, a war hero or something. Yeah.
That's a good song.
It is a good song. So there's an...
Oh, no, that's The Ghost of You. Helena's the...
Oh, I'm not that big of a My Chem fan.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Yeah. Well, Mark.
Mark. Check it out. So, now you get to cover Michael in Romance.
Yeah.
Fun. So, they banish him to a British island this time. So, he's under control. He doesn't get sovereignty or anything. He's just like, they're just like, fucking stay.
Yeah.
And he eventually dies there at age 51 from stomach cancer.
Aw.
Yeah. Okay. And he has this bullshit quote at the end where he's like, he requests to be buried in France with his French people that he loves so much.
Mm.
It's like, dude, what?
Did you?
Not really love you so much. Yeah. Like,
You kind of kept trying to bail.
Yeah, like, you bailed and you just fucked him up.
He spent very little time in France.
Yeah, like, come on.
Yeah.
So he died from stomach cancer. Fun fact is, so the most notorious picture of him,
mm-hmm.
and most pictures of him, you see him with his hand in his coat, right. Like, yeah. On his stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And it's suspected that he did that because of stomach pains.
Oh.
So it's suspected that he was suffering from stomach cancer for years.
And he held his stomach.
And that's, he was holding his stomach because it fucking hurt.
Okay.
And I was like, I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is really interesting. Yeah.
Eventually, after he died, though, he was, his body was moved to a crypt, at Les Invalides in Paris with other military leaders.
Okay.
So he was eventually entombed in Paris.
And he remains there to this day?
He remains there to this day. No problems there.
Ooh, let's go see his burial site.
That'd be cool.
That'd be really cool. Yeah.
I've always wanted to go to the catacombs.
I do not want to go to the catacombs.
So bad.
Scared
That was part of my, that was on the schedule for my honeymoon.
Was it really?
They got canceled. We were going to we booked a
place. You know, people actually fucking die in there, right?
I know. We booked a stay in Paris just so I can go to the catacombs.
Why would you want to chance it?
That's right.
So you relive your as above, so below cosplay?
Yes! Yeah, I love it.
Good God.
Okay, so to wrap it up, I have some interesting quotes that I wanted to read of him because they're just kind of weird. And again, kind of like add some irony to his. All of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's one, two, three.
We should have done like a quote game here or something like that.
What do you mean?
You like have me guess the one Napoleon said or something like that?
Oh, these are all Napoleon.
It's all
so,
Napoleon?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll get the answers right every time then.
Exactly, there you go. So, got like five of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the only way to lead people is to show them a future. A leader is a dealer in hope.
Ugh.
Eh, all right.
Hey, you.
Yeah, it's like, okay, jerk.
Yeah.
Like, weird.
No, but that's so fucking frilly. Like,
yeah,
you're saying something without even saying something.
It's also, it's just like, so you're a liar.
Yeah.
Like, okay. This one's actually kind of smart, but he didn't really learn from it. Never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Russians definitely went by that. Yeah, like, yeah, you're making a huge mistake, and they'll let you do it. Like,
walked right into it, pal.
Yeah. Envy is a declaration of inferiority. Like,
oh.
Everyone's envious of something.
That always reminded me of that other quote where it's like hate is a lack of imagination.
Oh, okay.
Where it's like he can't try hard enough to find some like reasonable cause why a person's acting some way.
The reason most people fail instead of succeed is they trade what they want most for what they want at the moment.
Yeah.
That one I kind of get. Oh, yeah. Okay. I get that. That's a very
it's like that game where you give a kid a marshmallow now or wait 5 minutes to get 2 marshmallows.
Exactly. Yeah. And then lastly, which is, this one's just fucking awful. If you wish to be a success in the world, promise everything, deliver nothing.
God, that's real Hitler.
That's real. It's just really politician. Yeah. Like, it goes right with the first one. Like, you promise a lot of hope and deliver none of it. Yeah. Like, so
Hitler said something exactly like that, too.
Probably got it from Napoleon.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it kind of goes with our debate at the end of your topic was, is he a bad guy? And it's like, he knew exactly what he was doing.
Right.
Like,
right.
That quote right there sums it up.
That's what it was. It was, if you fail, don't be around to accept the failure or something like that. It was
and then he killed himself.
Yeah.
And the last thing I have is a tie to Nostradamus.
Oh, okay.
So Nostradamus, one of his predictions was that I think there'd be 3... antichrists throughout history.
Yes.
Napoleon is supposedly the second.
Okay, the second coming.
The second antichrist. Or no, he was the first. He was the first antichrist. Hitler was the second.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently we have not yet
seen
the third.
You sure?
Yeah, maybe. But according to Nostradamus, obviously Nostradamus was before Napoleon and Hitler,
mm-hmm.
but people based off his predictions kind of peg Napoleon and Hitler in as one and two.
So yeah. Just 3 is coming.
3 is still yet to come.
Okay.
Because, I mean, if you think about it, we haven't had anyone on the scale of Napoleon and Hitler that has really reshaped the globe.
Right.
Well,
I mean, new year.
2021 could be. Okay, so we got 2020, which was just bullshit. 2021, probably not as much, but just one antichrist.
Well, we get to unite. I think 2021, we get to unite in one antichrist.
Okay, one antichrist.
Because this year we did have an antichrist, but nobody united on it.
Gotcha.
Trump.
What is Biden?
Biden's the antichrist?
I mean, I don't know.
He's like 83 years old.
Or he's immortal.
83-year-old antichrist.
I don't know.
A geriatric antichrist.
I think he seems like a very sweet man. I don't know.
We'll see.
Not making a claim, just throwing it out there.
We have 20 days to find out.
Yes. Come inauguration.
Yeah.
We'll see what that speech sounds like.
I tricked you.
Listen here, man. His famous line so far. The thing is, man. Oh, and he's gonna be like, we're gonna burn them all.
gotcha. It was all a ruse.
Or it's Kamala.
No, it's definitely not her. She's a beautiful sweetheart. All right, are you ready?
All right. Yeah, I think that's it. So right. We'll wrap this up. We're gonna hand it off to Mark. He's gonna follow up on all of our questions.
Yeah, go for it, buddy.
And figure out what that My Chemical Romance song is.
Yeah, Helena, Ghost of You. I'm not okay. Those are the only 3.
That's the only 3 I know. Oh, Black Parade.
Yeah.
Obviously.
When I was a young boy, I asked Mark to research all my topics.
All right, guys. Have a great New Year's. Be safe. If you're listening to this after New Year's, I take it you were safe.
Yeah.
So
good for you.
Good for you.
You made it.
Job well done.
All right. Night, everybody.
Actually, you will be listening to this after New Year's because we don't post it.
That's true.
For a couple days.
Can we say bye now?
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay.
Welcome to the future. Happy New Year to all of you. 2021, the boss level, as CJ called it, It's time to fight M. Bison, and I choose Dal Zim, because I always choose Dal Zim. And if you didn't grow up playing Street Fighter, there's the door. You can't see me, but I assure you I'm pointing at an exit. Is anybody else's head spinning? Feels like Christopher Nolan had something to do with the labyrinth that was Napoleon's life. My part this week was heavily influenced by a suggestion that CJ made, and truthfully, I'm happy to shift the focus slightly away from Napoleon while, of course, still keeping him in the same shot. Reason being, French historian Jean Toulard claims that following his death, there has been an article or book written about Napoleon every single year. On top of this, he has appeared in over 1,000 films, and during the 200th anniversary of his defeat at Waterloo, there were not one, not two, but four exhibitions running in France alone devoted to him. I mean, honestly, what more is there left to say about the wee man? So, with Martin Luther King Day on January 18th and Black History Month right around the corner in February, I think it serves us better to shift the narrative to Napoleon's failed conquest of Haiti. Having fought more than 70 battles, of which he suffered only 8 documented defeats, Napoleon drank from the chalice of victory almost 90% of the time. However, the David versus Goliath battle of the Haitian Revolution is one of the most defining moments in Black history and had a lasting impact on Europe's colonial rule. For those of you that are unfamiliar, here's a brief history of Haiti. Roughly the size of the state of Maryland, Haiti is located in the Caribbean and neighbors the Dominican Republic. After the French arrived in the 17th century, the indigenous population was eradicated, and as a major colonial power involved in the transatlantic slave trade, France sent enslaved persons from West Africa to farm raw goods for international commerce. Haiti was rich in natural resources such as coffee, sugar, and indigo, making it one of the wealthiest colonies in the world at that time. By the time the 1791 revolt took place, almost 500,000 slaves had arrived in Haiti via West Africa, which was an advantage that they were able to apply. By utilizing their native languages, traditions such as voodoo and African spirituality, the freedom fighters united under their emerging leader Toussaint Louverture. Battles were waged for almost 10 years following, before Toussaint and his men took over the entire island and led a final charge against 50,000 of Napoleon's troops, claiming victory and independence in 1803. As a clear sign of its new direction and liberation from France, the freedom fighters changed the country's given name back from Saint-Domingue to Haiti. Now, not only did Haiti become the first country ever founded by formerly enslaved Black people, the second country to defeat Europeans for freedom, and by nature of their victory, the first country to abolish slavery in the Western Hemisphere, but the eventual outcome of the rebellion also had two other major significant ramifications. The successful slave revolt essentially diminished any chance that Napoleon had of creating a stronghold in the Americas, where they planned to build a new empire. Coinciding with this, you may have heard of the Louisiana Purchase of 1803. Or you may not have. I have no idea what the American education system actually teaches you. Well, the Louisiana Purchase swiftly followed Napoleon's defeat in Haiti, and with accompanying, I can never say that word right, economic pressures and impending war with Great Britain, he was forced into a transaction that doubled the United States landmass. Literally. It gained 828,000 square miles of land for the mere cost of around 3 cents an acre. Part or all of 15 states were created from the land deal, and it was considered one of the most important achievements of Thomas Jefferson's presidency. Jefferson was, however, wildly concerned that the spirit of the uprising in Haiti would spread, and Black slaves in America would also revolt. Sadly, for primarily this reason, The United States failed to accept and recognize Haiti's independence until 1862. That's almost 60 years after it actually became independent. As white Americans feared that by simply acknowledging Haiti's existence, it would have a negative impact on their own slave-driven economy. It never ceases to amaze me, the shitty and inhumane things that we'll do to one another when we're scared or acting out of fear. There, we have it, a colossal victory, an unexpected loss, an incredible example of human fight and spirit against oppression, as well as the ripple effect. Napoleon once said, "Everything on earth is soon forgotten, except the opinion we leave imprinted on history." Well, it is my opinion that we unfortunately too often forget the things that are most important. Until next time, stay safe and take care of one another.